Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's my favorite time of the week. It's an opportunity for me to share vital health information with you. And so stay with us for an hour or two, and you'll learn the best of what's happening on the natural medicine front, as well as the best of high-tech medicine. We put those together for you each weekend here on Intelligent Medicine. And a big story that we've been covering for the past few weeks, it's a story that has confusing elements, is the Joan Rivers death. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Also, we're going to be talking about Ebola. Is this something that we have to worry about? 888-302-3684. That's a number that you can call us to reach us on. We invite your phone calls. And lots to discuss on today's edition of Intelligent Medicine. Let's start with Joan Rivers' death. Okay, lots of confusion about what precisely happened with Joan Rivers. So far, an autopsy has been inconclusive. She was buried last Sunday amid great fanfare, as she probably would have liked to have been sent off in a showbiz fashion, with lots of wonderful tributes and lots of show business celebrities surrounding her as she made her final performance. And a timeline has emerged in Joan Rivers' death, but it's a confusing timeline. What they say is that by 9:40 in the morning, a 911 call from the Yorkville endoscopy clinic where she had her procedure reported a patient in cardiac arrest. And so emergency responders were dispatched. 5 minutes later, the New York Fire Department response team arrived, and they already found CPR efforts on Rivers underway. She was attached to a defibrillator, and a breathing tube had been inserted into her lungs. And within 5 minutes, she was taken to nearby Mount Sinai Hospital, where ultimately life support efforts were futile, and possibly she had sustained sufficient brain damage, heart damage, to result in her death after she was taken off life support. So what's the deal here? What actually happened? Well, it's conflicting stories. She apparently went to this endoscopy outpatient facility to have her throat examined, which is a reasonable thing to do. This is a place where they look up your rear end and down through your esophagus and apparently into your throat, although it's claimed that a biopsy of the vocal cords has never been performed at Yorkville Endoscopy. That's what the clinic says. The clinic states that they don't perform biopsies of the vocal cords. But according to, and this is a story widely reported in the Daily News here in New York, the routine surgical procedure that Joan Rivers was supposed to undergo, which was basically to take a look-see at her vocal cords because maybe she had a hoarse and raspy voice, turned deadly when a doctor who arrived at the clinic with the legendary comic's entourage performed an unplanned biopsy on her vocal cords. Well, here's a conflict, because they say a biopsy of the vocal cords has never been performed at Yorkville Endoscopy, and yet that's what they say. They say that they looked down. This is the claim in the Daily News article, is that the operation changed. At first they said, well, let's look down, and they saw something. And then a doctor who came along for the ride said, let's do a biopsy. So what's the deal here? They also say that Yorkville Endoscopy is a clinic that usually only deals with digestive issues. And looking down wasn't the problem. But the biopsy, they say, caused Joan Rivers' vocal cords to seize. It's called laryngospasm. The vocal cords seize and air can't get past them. And that may have been the beginning of the problem. According to the source in the Daily News, a biopsy like that should only be done in a hospital setting. This, according to a source for the Daily News. Also, when you do a biopsy, it is generally thought that you got to do it under general anesthesia to avoid precisely the problem that Joan Rivers had, which is your vocal cords seize up and air can't get past them. With general anesthesia, they stick a breathing tube down your throat so your vocal cords can't close. In fact, if you have a breathing tube inserted into you, that's the safest possible place to be from the standpoint of inability to breathe, because even if you don't breathe, the breathing tube that's inserted into your throat and into your lungs breathes for you. So a statement from this place, Yorkville Endoscopy, says general anesthesia has never been administered at Yorkville Endoscopy. The type of sedation used at Yorkville Endoscopy is monitored anesthesia care. Our anesthesiologists utilize light to moderate sedation. And so one question, yeah, that resolves apparently one question that I had. Was she under general anesthesia? No, she was under local anesthesia. And then another question I had was a licensed anesthesiologist present? And they say, yes, only licensed medical doctors who are board certified anesthesiologists administer anesthesia at the clinic, according to the statement issued by Yorkville Endoscopy. So were they wrong to go past the procedure where they just look down to convert it into a biopsy, or maybe they were trying to fix things? Well, you know, that's actually debatable. I did some research on this. I went to the Dr. Oz website of all places, and I found an article by Jonathan Aviv, who is an ear, nose, and throat doctor, from 2009. And what he says is that you actually can get a biopsy of your vocal cords or your throat without general anesthesia. And he cites as advantages, as soon as the biopsy is over, the scope is removed from the nose, and then you can return to work without any hangover from your anesthesia. The scope travels to the nose to reach the vocal cords. A small amount of anesthetic spray is given right on the vocal cords. 2 minutes later, the vocal cords are numb, and a biopsy can safely take place. So to the question, can biopsies be performed without using general anesthesia, there's some controversy as to what's correct. Another alternative scenario is that regardless of whether the tube was stuck down, Joan Rivers may not responded even to the light anesthesia that she was put under. That is possibly the case for an 81-year-old individual. Maybe greater caution should be undertaken for someone past a certain age or given certain physical pre-existing problems that we don't know about. Maybe the anesthesia caused her heart to go into arrhythmia or to stop. Maybe her breathing stopped because her anesthesia was too deep, sort of like the Michael Jackson situation with propofol. That's the type of anesthesia that's often used to sedate people for minor procedures like upper endoscopies, colonoscopies. Who knows at this point? Hopefully and probably we will get an answer, because this is a cautionary tale. We need to disclose all the facts around Joan Rivers' death to avoid future tragedies that may have implications for all of us were we to undergo some kind of seemingly minor procedure. All right, 888-302-3684. We'll be taking your phone calls momentarily. We've got lots more to talk about. We'll touch on Ebola and lots more during this hour of Intelligent Medicine. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoff.
Did you know that doctors recommend omega-3 essential fatty acids for kids and grown-ups alike? Nordic Naturals, the number one fish oil in the U.S., offers omega-3s for everyone. In fact, Nordic Naturals has one of the largest product portfolios in the world. Our best-selling Ultimate Omega is available in soft gels or liquid, both with a light, clean lemon flavor and no fishy aftertaste. This concentrated formula has been clinically shown to support heart health. For children, kids everywhere love Nordic Naturals Children's DHA, offered in great-tasting strawberry liquid or chewable soft gels. New Omega Boost is a creamy, delicious formulation of omega-3s. With its great mango taste and velvety smooth texture, Nordic Naturals Omega Boost is a great choice for the whole family. Nordic Naturals carefully manages every step of production of our omega-3 fish oils from boat to bottle, so you can count on Nordic Naturals to be exceptionally pure, fresh, and effective. Nordic Naturals, for kids and grown-ups alike. Available at natural products retailers or online at nordicnaturals.com.
You rely on me to tell you about the latest, most effective products, and I've got one for you today. It's an organic bug spray, and it's a must-have for your home. Cedarside's original biting insect spray, formerly Cedarside Best Yet, from Cedarside.com. Cedarside Original is 100% USDA bio-preferred organic pest control, made from all-natural cedar oil, and both kills and repels bugs. It's a contact killer, yet not at all harmful to people, pets, or the environment. Cedarside.com offers a whole suite of organic pest control products to kill and eradicate bed bugs, mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, and mites. Cedarside.com products may be used in and around the home, and you could even create a pest barrier through your sprinkler system. Cedarside.com. When you check out, don't forget to type in Hoffman to get free shipping or call 800-842-1464, 800-842-1464, and mention my name, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, for free shipping. That's Cedarside.com, 800-842-1464, the only pest control you'll ever need, and it's organic. Cedarside.com, 800-842-1464.
DrHoffman.com, your portal for cutting-edge information on health and nutrition.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. And Ebola is raging in Africa. This is different than previous outbreaks where a few hundred people have died, and it's been mostly isolated to remote areas in the interior of Africa. Ebola has come to urbanized Africa, or perhaps another way you could say this is urbanized Africa has come to Ebola because the demographic patterns have shifted. More and more people are living in squalor, in shacks, in poverty, in cities in Africa than in villages. At least villages offered some buffering of the transmission of the virus. But when people are living packed together in cities and sanitation is poor and there's poor medical facilities, there's potential for explosive transmission of this. So I've been saying over the past few weeks, like, okay, Ebola, it's going to affect Africa, but there's not a lot to worry about here in terms of the West and certainly the United States. But new concerns have been raised by a guy named Michael Osterholm. He is a medical doctor who's written an op-ed piece in The Times, What We're Afraid to Say About Ebola. And he says there are two possible future chapters to this story that should keep us up at night. And what are these nightmare scenarios? Well, the first is the possibility, he says, that the Ebola virus spreads from West Africa to megacities in other regions of the developing world. Now, we're talking, you know, there are cities in the United States that are megacities, you know, New York, Los Angeles, Chicago Metro, Dallas Metro. But there are more and more cities across the world that are huge cities with 10 plus million inhabitants, 20 million even. And more and more of them are located in the third world. So what happens when an infected person travels by plane to a big city in Africa, Lagos, Nairobi, Kinshasa, or Mogadishu? These are cities with multi-million inhabitants. Or it could even jump continents to Karachi, Jakarta, Mexico City. You know, Mexico City has nearly 20 million inhabitants. Or Dhaka, which is in Pakistan. All hell could break loose in under conditions where cities have large slums and poor healthcare systems. So that is a scary possibility. Another possibility, and nobody wants to talk about this, but viruses can mutate. And right now they're saying the reason this virus is spreading is because people handle bodies. They're ignorant. They prepare bodies for burial according to traditional religious practices. They shouldn't touch the bodies. They should just dispose of them by burning. Or they even kiss the body of a deceased person. That's part of the tradition. Well, that's a sure way to get the virus. But there is a possibility, although remote, that the virus could learn to be transmitted like the flu. It could be aerosolized and transmitted through a sneeze or a cough. And when that happens, it's going to really explode. And there's precedence for that because this is a form of Ebola, you know, the different subtypes of Ebola. But in 2012, Ebola Zaire, which is the same virus that's causing the West Africa outbreak, was found to be transmissible from pigs to monkeys. both of whose lungs are very similar to those of humans. It's transmitted not by contact, but by a respiratory route. And in the hot zone, the monkeys who had Ebola, they were placed in a quarantine station near Washington, D.C. They transmitted the virus even though they were individually quarantined in cages. They didn't touch each other, but it was in the air. And that is a scary prospect. So, I don't mean to sow panic, worry, and concern. And, you know, there are actually people out there who are exploiting this. They're trying to sell phony immune support products to protect us from the coming ravages of Ebola. That's just nuts and exploitive and criminal. But we need to prepare our health infrastructure for the eventuality that this thing could spread. But here's a third possibility, and this isn't mentioned in the article in the New York Times, is that Ebola could be weaponized. It could be crudely weaponized by, hey, guess what? There are terrorists in Africa. They're in Nigeria, Boko Haram, and they have contacts with, they're like a franchise of international terrorism. They have contacts with other terrorist groups, and they say they get a vial of contaminated blood or contaminated sputum, or one of their scientists who believes in Muslim fundamentalism decides to culture it and prepare it as a bioweapon and then disseminate, drop it on a Western city. Say, open up a vial of it in Berlin, Paris, London, or even New York or Washington, D.C. What could happen then? And that is something, you know, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but we need to be prepared for that eventuality. All right. This important story has to do with medications that we use for dementia. Many patients receive medications for their dementia. And according to the Journal of the American Medical Association, physicians and families often continue the flow of medications well beyond the point at which they may prolong or enhance a patient's life. According to statistics, more than half of nursing home patients who suffer severe dementia and are likely to die within a year or two are administered medications that offer little to no benefit. These medications include drugs like Aricept, Exelon, Namenda, and these are said to be helpful for Alzheimer's disease. But the point I'm trying to make is they barely work. They certainly don't work in end-stage Alzheimer's disease. They're commonly initiated for patients at the early stage of the disease. They may somewhat slow the rate at which patients become unable to care for themselves. But it's nuts to continue these heavy-duty medications with all kinds of side effects in patients who are well-advanced, living in nursing homes. It's extraordinarily expensive, number one. It's worthless. It causes a lot of side effects. 65% of patients in certain parts of the United States, particularly the West and the East, not so much the midsection of the country, took at least one drug of questionable value. And that is a concern. Men were more likely than women to get such drugs. So in an editorial, a geriatrician, Dr. Greg Sachs, expressed hope that the latest findings will prompt physicians who treat any patients with a poor prognosis, with a limited time horizon, to reconsider overprescribing unnecessary meds. And I say, look, there's a place for natural therapies here. They're benign. They're easy to administer. Recent studies show that vitamin E, even just good old-fashioned vitamin E administered at a dose of 2,000 international units could slow the progression to inability to care for oneself by 30% without side effects. Imagine that. So too many medications being used near the end of life for patients with advanced dementia. It's unnecessary. It's criminal. It's inhumane. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. 308-888-302-3684 is our number for Intelligent Medicine.
For more Intelligent Medicine, download our free podcast at drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine, 888-302-3684, our number, if you have questions. And a big story this week, this is out of the Wall Street Journal on the op-ed page, and it's created quite a stir lots of people sharing this article, and I put it up on Twitter, and I put it up on Facebook, and I got a lot of likes and comments. And I actually heard an interview with the doctor who wrote this op-ed on one of the major talk shows this week. He's been doing the talk show circuit. His name is Dr. Mark Sklar. He's an endocrinologist here in New York. And he wrote an op-ed entitled, "Doctoring in the Age of Obamacare, Endlessly Entering Data or Calling for Permission to Prescribe or Trying to Avoid Medicare Penalties, When Should I See Patients?" And it's a cry of the heart from a doctor who really loves medicine. I heard him on the radio, and he said the reason he got into medicine, this is like very much like doctors. Doctors are generally smart folks, men and women, who are real good in school, and they love science. But they want to do applied science. They don't want to just build bridges or highways or develop new drugs in a laboratory. They want to work directly with people. They're altruistic. And that was actually my motivation for getting into medicine. I love science, and I also love working with people and helping people. So that's what it's all about. And then what they're confronted with in their medical careers is they become like court stenographers. They have to enter enormous amounts of data now with the bureaucratization of medicine. We could blame Obamacare or the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, just making things worse. But this is a trend that was well underway before Obamacare, the bureaucratization of medicine. And so what he writes is that this guy's been in solo practice for 17 years. He says the push to use electronic medical records has had more than financial costs. Yeah, it's expensive. It's super expensive for the doctor because the doctor often has to pick up the tab to buy electronic medical record equipment for their office. And then it goes on haywire, and they have to call in consultants to make it work, you know, tens and tens of thousands of dollars. But he says that it's disruptive to the patient visit. That's one of the reasons I do not use electronic medical records. He says, my eyes were focused on the keyboard, and the lack of direct contact kept patients from opening up and discussing their medical and personal problems. He says, I soon returned to my old method of dictating notes and pasting a printout of the dictation in the electronic record. So, you know, he wanted to have the contact, and then afterward, he'd have to spend double the time. He'd have to talk to the patients, then after the medical encounter, he would dictate what happened, and that just eats up time. He participates in Medicare, which I don't. One of the reasons I don't participate in Medicare is it just doesn't cover some of the services that I offer in the field of complementary and alternative medicine. They just don't want to cover lengthy consultations about nutrition, the use of intravenous vitamins and minerals. That just would not go down well under Medicare. But also it's the time constraints. The reimbursement is ridiculous, and I spend, you know, half an hour to an hour with each patient. And with the reimbursement rates of Medicare, I would just be, you know, I'd have to close up shop. But also onerous documentation requirements. He says for Medicare, he has to demonstrate, quote, meaningful use, which means he has to document that he covered a checklist of mandated items during the office visit. So he says, quote, I spend 90 minutes each day entering mostly meaningless data. And he also says, you know, great, electronic prescriptions. That goes directly to the pharmacy. It can be reviewed by the insurance company for approval. And he says, and you may be one of these patients. He says patients often do not want their prescriptions sent electronically. They want a physical copy, either because they don't trust the internet or because they don't need to fill the prescription immediately. And I get that. But if a doctor doesn't prescribe electronically for Medicare patients, they're penalized with a decrease in reimbursement. So they're incentivized to go electronic. And, you know, if they don't, and it inconveniences the patients, the doctors lose money. And insurers are increasingly require physicians to obtain pre-authorizations for medication. So this involves, he says, calling a telephone number. I've been there, done that. At this point, I just say, look, you know, I don't have enough staff to keep up with this. You get rerouted several times, and then you're kept on hold waiting for a representative. The process is, he says, quote, demeaning and can take 30 to 45 minutes for each prescription. It's like singing for your meal, trying to get the right medication for a patient, which is often denied. Then there are the codes. There's something new called ICD-10. Currently, there's 15,000 codes. Now there will be 70,000 medical diagnostic codes. So if you have an eye injury, it's not enough to say you have an eye injury. It has to be eye injury caused by a golf ball, left or right eye, you know, and it's on and on and on. And it has to, if it's not correctly filled out, the doctor doesn't get reimbursed for the service. He says the multiple bureaucratic distractions in my day consume so much time that I have to give up what little personal time I have in the morning, evening, and on weekends if I want to continue to provide excellent care during office hours. The other thing he says, and this is really important, I will tell you that I have the luxury of spending lots of time researching and reading and keeping up with developments in medicine. I think it's vital for a doctor to be able to do that. But a tired, burned out, demoralized doctor who's spending tons of time on bureaucratic nonsense is not going to want to do their homework. Your doctor may not want to, for example, spend time learning about the latest innovations in nutrition because they're tired. They're beleaguered. They're trying to make a living. Often they're trying to pay off enormous medical school loans. And yet more and more onerous obligations and responsibilities and demands are being placed on doctors. And so check out this article. It's a great article in this week's Wall Street Journal. It really lays it out. His final call to action is to improve quality. We need to unchain healthcare providers from the bureaucracies that are strangling them fiscally and temporarily. In other words, using up all their time. We can better control medical costs if we strengthen physicians' relationships with their patients rather than with their computers. And the cartoon in this article is of a patient on one side and a doctor on the other side. In between is this gigantic computer with all kinds of dials and digits and, you know, bells and whistles that is the wall, literally, that separates healthcare providers from patients under the new system. And that, you know, and that's one of the reasons that I practice, I think, a different style of medicine that tries to circumvent these obstacles. It's where many doctors like myself are blazing new pathways towards medical care that I think will revolutionize medicine in the future. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
This traffic report from the bloodstream brought to you by Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract. Well, that inbound blood flow is really slowing down now due to plaque from cholesterol, but help's on the way from Kyolic. More than 750 peer-reviewed research studies indicate that Kyolic not only keeps circulation moving smoothly, it also helps improve a number of cardiovascular risk factors. Kyolic provides powerful antioxidants that help keep your arteries healthy. It reduces homocysteine, a risk factor for heart disease. Unlike other garlic products, Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract is made from 100% organically grown garlic, is completely odorless, and won't upset your stomach. With all of these heart-healthy benefits, it's no surprise that Kyolic is the best-selling garlic supplement in the world. Look for Kyolic at Vitamin Shop, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores everywhere. Help keep your system stay humming along with Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract today.
Prevent those frustrating seasonal symptoms, including sneezing, runny nose, and watery eyes that can spoil your time outdoors by supercharging your immune response right at the source, your digestive tract, where an amazing 70% of your immune cells reside. If your immune system views pollen, animal dander, or wheat as a dangerous invader, it will react by stimulating an inflammatory response and incite all those unpleasant symptoms. What you may not know is that the immune receptor cells residing in your gut all depend on a healthy probiotic population to function at their peak. That's why Dr. Fred Pescatore, a best-selling author on the subject, recommends Dr. O'Hara's probiotics as a top-tier defense in the management of seasonal symptoms. Dr. O'Hara's probiotics delivers live, beneficial bacteria in an easily absorbed formula and is backed by over 25 years of research. Discover the Dr. O'Hara difference and enjoy the outdoors again.
Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are available at Vitamin Shop, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide.
Why do I use Clear Sinus Care? Because I like to breathe.
Because I hate having a dry nose.
There are a lot of reasons to use Clear Sinus Care, the nasal rinse and sinus spray with xylitol. But the best reason is because it works.
I use Clear because my doctor told me to.
Because it's all natural.
Clear, spelled X-L-E-A-R, moisturizes and soothes those dry and irritated sinuses. Clear Sinus Care not only helps with dry air problems, it also helps wash away pollens, pollutants, and other airborne contaminants, making your sinus passageways all clear.
Because my snoring was keeping my wife awake.
Because now I'm not all stuffed up.
And because it's all natural, Clear is 100% safe for children. The perfect way to keep your whole family healthy and breathing right. Prevent the misery and stop the suffering with Clear. That's X-L-E-A-R at clear.com and fine retailers.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
A regular dose of intelligent medicine injected directly into your inbox. Subscribe to Dr. Hoffman's free newsletter. Just go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Biodiversity. Well, what does that mean? Biodiversity in the natural environment means that we want, in a healthy environment, lots and lots of different species. And what we're seeing is the extinction of a lot of species. More weeds are growing in our habitats than natural organisms. And this is also happening in our intestinal tracts. Because of the use of antibiotics, because of the use of acid-blocking medication, because of the use of chlorinated water, because of lack of breastfeeding, because of our highly sanitized environment, because of hand cleansers and mouthwashes and antiseptic toothpastes, we're killing off our good bacteria. We refer to these good bacteria as our microbiome. And so what consequences does it have? Well, it has myriad consequences, and I'll just state a couple. Headline, this is from Science Daily this week, diverse gut bacteria associated with favorable ratio of estrogen metabolites. I'll translate. We're seeing lots and lots of uterine cancer, breast cancer. What's up with that? Well, part of the reason is that we are killing off some of the bacteria in our intestinal tract that help to metabolize or break down estrogen. Actually, our gut bacteria are necessary for doing sort of a cleanup job on excess levels of hormones in our bodies. And so researchers here, it is in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism, found that women who have less bacterial diversity had higher levels of the bad kind of estrogen that may promote the risk of breast cancer. Right, here's another one. Flu vaccine. That's controversial. Some of you say, well, I don't want to take the flu vaccine. It makes me sicker. So there have been some doubts cast on its effectiveness. But this is not about whether or not to take the flu vaccine. This is about if you take the flu vaccine, will it work? One of the problems with the flu vaccine is in the very people that it should help, the elderly, people who are immune suppressed, if it doesn't, it often doesn't take. It doesn't do the job to jack up your immune system response to help protect you from viral infection. So this news story also in just this week, headline, antibiotics hinder flu vaccine effectiveness. That's the surprising conclusion of new studies involving mice treated with antibiotics or they're raised under sterile conditions. And what they found is that they had impaired responses to flu shots. So what's up with that? Well, it turns out that the bacteria in your gut have an effect on immunity. And it is necessary to have a full complement of the right kind of bacteria intestinally to allow the vaccine to do its job. That's pretty amazing. So what can you do? Well, avoid antibiotics unnecessarily. Take probiotics. Eat a diet rich in healthy fibers. Eat fermented foods. These are some things that will promote healthy bacteria. Don't eat a lot of chemicalized food. Don't take in a lot of sugar. That actually pollutes your intestinal tract, causes a proliferation of nasty bacteria and yeast. So we want to clean up our guts so that we can enable our immune systems to work better. And this one, you know, we talk about eye protection. with nutrients? What are some of the nutrients that protect the eyes from, say, macular degeneration? Well, antioxidants, fish oil, especially DHA in fish oil. Well, what about hearing loss? Are there nutrients that can help prevent hearing loss? Headline, again this week, from Harvard University. Fish and fatty acid consumption is associated with lower risk of hearing loss in women. Researchers found that consumption of two or more servings of fish per week was associated with a lower risk of hearing loss in women. And the suggestion is that there may be a relationship between blood levels of omega-3 fatty acids, EPA and DHA, in terms of the risk of hearing loss. No question that these omega-3 fatty acids protect the nerves, reduce inflammation, and thus may have a beneficial effect on hearing, something that you do not want to lose as you age. All right, 888-302-3684, if you care to call us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is the Weekend Edition of Intelligent Medicine.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you.
Wellness is just a click away. Go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. All right, we got a bunch of medical shorts to share with you in the remaining part of this hour. Lots more in hour two, so stay with us. Dietary fats. Now, these days we tend not to stigmatize dietary fats because studies are showing that it's actually carbohydrates which may be more deleterious to the body, causing insulin resistance and weight gain. And a recent study suggested that virtually as much dietary fat as you want while restricting carbs was a way that you could reduce cardiovascular risk at the same time shed pounds. But what happens when you take in a lot of fats? Well, there's no question that some studies suggest that a high fat intake is something that could be potentially pro-inflammatory. But many of these studies are done in isolation. They feed people a lot of fat on a junk food diet, and it causes inflammation, and they're not eating fresh fruits and vegetables, which are rich in protected polyphenols. This study sheds light on how a diverse diet, rich in helpful polyphenols, can protect the body from oxidative stress, even if you consume a lot of fat. Headline, resveratrol reduces high-fat diet's effect on mitochondrial function. Mice were given a high-fat diet or a high-fat diet enhanced with resveratrol. And what they found was that regulatory T cells, they have to do with immunity, and measures of mitochondrial function and measures of free radical damage, reactive oxygen species, were improved when patients got resveratrol. So resveratrol exerted a protective effect. All right, you heard about green coffee bean extract. It's been popularized and touted on the Dr. Oz show, but the Federal Trade Commission wasn't swallowing it. On Monday, they slapped a $3.5 million fine on a company selling green coffee extract ingredients for dietary supplements because of specious claims. They say that the company, Applied Food Sciences, promoted a study conducted by researchers in India who were paid to do the research. That could be a little disreputable. These so-called researchers produced a deeply flawed report that falsified key information, possibly inflammation, including the duration of the trial and the weight of the subjects. So what they're saying here is that Applied Food Sciences knew or should have known that this bot study didn't prove anything. This, according to the director of the Federal Trade Commission Bureau of Consumer Protection, and they're going to pay through the nose. So we wonder if Dr. Oz is going to recant his recommendation about, quote, a staggering newly released study that showed participants lost an astounding amount of fat and weight by taking green coffee bean extract. I don't really think it's all that it's cracked up to be. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks for joining us this hour. Stay tuned. We got more coming up on this weekend edition of Intelligent Medicine.